KUCI.
It makes me wanna. KUCI.
It makes me wanna.
KUCI.
It makes me wanna.
KUCI.
KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to KUCI.org.
Well, good morning, everyone. This is Mr. Ryan Foland, also known as DJ Ginger MC, and I'm accompanied by the one and only Miss Dash. Say hello, Dash.
Hi, everyone.
All right. Good to be here. We're doing good, and we have Mr. John Lim, who's with us. We selfishly have him for an entire hour. Look at, he's laughing already.
Thank you so much.
Oh, John, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How are you both doing?
I'm just a little jealous.
Are you? Really? Why is that?
Yeah, I'm a little jealous because you have such a great radio voice.
Hey, yours is not bad either. I've told you several times I think you need to launch a podcast.
Yeah, well, this is kind of my radio and the podcast concept. Actually, I might be interested in talking with you a little bit about that today. You know,
absolutely.
what is a podcast, how that works, because
sure.
I love your podcast. It's called Moving Forward Podcast, and you're basically taking a chance to interview people who've overcome obstacles in their life that have achieved success, and you've got a couple weird little branched out digital products that you're working on as well, correct?
Absolutely. That's kind of my thing, Ryan. Weird little projects all over the place.
And I say weird in the most enduring way. Tell us about how this whole, you know, get moving forward. Were you the guy that kept snoozing and kept sleeping in, and all of a sudden you're like, well, I got to do something about this, so I'll start an early morning podcast or something? What's the history?
No, it's funny you mentioned that. I mean, you know, it was November 2014. I'll never forget it. I'm an NPR junkie, so I love streaming radio. And I was at my ex-girlfriend's gym. Every story I have involves an ex-girlfriend for some reason. But anyway, I was at the gym, and I couldn't get NPR to stream. And then I had an old iPhone back then, and I saw the little podcast icon, and I'd seen it before, but I'd never really clicked on it. So I decided, you know what, I need some streaming content, especially when I'm on a treadmill. So I clicked on it, and I just started exploring. I was like, whoa, there's all this really cool content here. And I wanted to see, you know, is there a price? You know, do you have to, like, pay something to subscribe to these shows? And there was, like, it was free. It was all free. So I started listening to a couple of shows. I listened to Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad. I just read his book. I got hooked on that. And then I discovered John Lee Dumas's Entrepreneur on Fire. And he was, at the time, the only one who was doing a daily podcast interviewing entrepreneurs, and I just started listening to it, and I discovered he'd only been doing this for about a year or two at the time. And so I connected with him on LinkedIn. I think it was LinkedIn, and then I sent him a note. I said, hey, love what you're doing, really inspirational. I took a couple of his webinars and then kind of pieced it together, and I said to myself, I had one of those aha moments where I said, you know, it was part curiosity, part ego, where I said, you know what, I think I can do this. So, you know, I just started studying a bunch of YouTube videos and tutorials and stuff. I have some experience working with video, so I was able to translate some of those editing skills to audio. And then next thing I know, I'm hitting that publish button on the first episode and thinking, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
Wow, yeah. Have you ever used the service MailChimp?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you know,
in fact, we use that right now.
Okay. You know when you go to push the button and it's what sends it out there into the world, and there's the little monkey finger and it says,
yes,
are you ready?
I
and there's
sent
like
one out just about half an hour ago to let my followers know that I'm going to be on Ryan Foland's radio show.
Nice.
So, yes, I saw that high five.
Before that, there's like the little sweaty monkey finger and it basically sweats through.
Yes.
Yeah, it's funny, and I think that that's something people are fearful of, but it can also be exciting. I mean, it's nerve-wracking to be not only in front of people, but then be on the airwaves and then just put yourself out there. But it's that monkey sweat dripping off your finger. That's when you know you're onto something. So
absolutely.
How did you choose this whole the theme of it? Because I know that, I mean, what a great story. You're at the gym, you're a NPRJ, that's what we call an NPR junkie, I just made that up, and you decided to reach out to John Dumas. Did he ever get back to you at all?
Absolutely. In fact, he not only wrote back to me, I actually ended up having him on the 50th episode of Movie Forward. That was another sweaty monkey paw moment for me, was actually inviting him to be on the show, and I didn't expect to hear back, and much less a yes. And then when he wrote yes, I was like, whoa, that's really crazy. And I have a lot of these who me moments, and that was definitely one of them when he said yes, I'd love to be on the show.
That's great. Yeah, I was introduced to him through Michael and Bonnie Houlihan, who are the founders of Barefoot Wine. And I was like, oh, you know, you get an email intro every once in a while. And I'm like, wait a minute, this is John Lee Dumas. And he responded super quick. And we've gone back a couple times. I am yet to fill out his survey for his show, because just like my survey, it's kind of a pain in the butt sometimes. But it's I think the takeaway here is that if you do or don't know John Lee Dumas, you should check him out. He is,
Yes. He's
really a pioneer in the podcasting space, because he just pretty much said, I'm going to be on fire and every day I'm going to do this. And he's high energy and he's got truth bombs left and right.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
To think that you are somebody who has never done a podcast before and you're sort of inspired by this guy to use social media to reach out on LinkedIn, create a connection, and ended up having him on your show. I mean, it just goes to show the connectivity tool that social media can have, especially for people that maybe you think are untouchable to some extent.
Absolutely. And I've had a bunch of those moments. I mean, just recently, I mean, you know, having connected with our mutual friend, Leonard Kim, yourself, just like amazing people who, honestly, I would never be thinking I would be talking to these individuals, much less interviewing them on a podcast. So it's been kind of trippy. And in fact, last week we just celebrated episode 100, and I had 10 guests return, just phenomenal people. Leonard was one of them. And it was really cool. It was really cool to have them back on and just share kind of what they've been up to and inspire our listeners to continue to move forward, as we say on the show.
That's great. So, you know, my show, I call it Get Notified, because I live and breathe in the social media world, but a few years ago I had no social footprint. So I've just been fascinated by all the different elements of what makes, you know, for the understanding, the demystifying of social media in general. And Leonard was a big help for that. In fact, I just gave a TEDx talk this last Saturday here at UC Irvine, and the talk was entitled Borderline Millennial Disorder. And I talk about how, well, you know, I'm all about communication and everybody's communicating on the internet. And on the internet, you have social media is where the conversations are happening. And who's good at social media? It's the millennials.
Right.
But then I really thought about it. And see, I always associated myself with a Gen X because I didn't grow up with social media. But then I'm sitting there going, I need to be good on social media or need to understand it. So I've got to tap into that millennialness. So I found like I'm on the border, right? Like, where one foot is in the Gen X and one foot is in the Gen Y, which is the millennial generation. And there's a lot to learn, but when you're talking about generations, I really feel like you have to use generalizations.
Yes.
And that gets you in trouble, because maybe the millennials in the middle are those that are most accurate to that description. But then you got people on the fringes that are maybe, you know, the young millennials and the old millennials. And so it's fun to see technology bring everybody together. And one of the three main takeaways that I'd learned from Leonard and from these different millennials that I, you know, politely researched by just trying to become friends with them and learn, is to not use social media as a tool of distraction, but to use it as a tool of attraction. And as soon as I started to look at social media in that way, you know, knowing that you had connected with Leonard, well, it's easy for me to reach out and build a relationship and connect with you. And I think that it's such a powerful, underutilized element of social media. People get on to burn time or to get lost. But really, if you look at social media as a way, I mean, you got in touch with John Lee Dumas, you got in touch with all these people, and, you know, you can really build your net worth by growing out your social network. It's just so powerful. And I think people are still intimidated when it comes to that. But I want to tell you, no, it is okay.
Yes. Not only is it okay, but I will tell you, I'll share a secret. One of the most powerful tools that is not being utilized is LinkedIn. I mean, when people think social media, they think Twitter, they think Facebook, Instagram, and I use all of those. But LinkedIn has been such a powerful tool. And when I was in my corporate days, I rarely used LinkedIn. I maybe updated my resume once a year. I would go on there if I was maybe casually browsing job posts. And today, I spent at least a couple of minutes a day on LinkedIn, sharing content, connecting with people. I have found that to be a real, real network accelerator.
Yeah, it's surprising how many college students don't have a LinkedIn account. It's almost like they're thinking, well, I'll eventually need that when I need a job. That's like saying you need to be fit, you know, as you're lining up on the starting line. So
exactly.
I think that, you know, would you, okay, let's talk social media here real quick, because the show is called Get Notified and you are listening on 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is KUCI. Show some love to KUCI on Twitter and Instagram. You can find them at KUCI FM. And John, before we dig into our social media sort of back and forth, how do we find you online? What's a good selfish social media plug for you?
Thanks for that, Ryan. Yeah, almost all of my handles are at Be Moving Forward. It's my Facebook. It's my Twitter. On Instagram, I actually just started using Instagram a lot more. I hadn't been using it that much. So I use my personal Instagram, and I use it for both personal as well as promoting the podcast. So that's JLIM0025. And I got to tell you where that handle comes from, Ryan. It comes from when I had my first email address. I was 25 years old. I had AOL. And I couldn't think of a more clever handle than my current age. So I'm thinking, well, you know, that'll work. And I've just stuck with it ever since.
I love it. That's great. And I just followed you. You now have a new follower. And look, you've got all...
wonderful. Awesome.
Are these all the people that you've interviewed on your show? I'm digging it.
Yes, a lot of them. Yeah. Every Tuesday, I'll post... I basically do an Instagram post where I'll have the headshot and the caption with the episode and the link in my bio. I just figured out how to do this. I'm a little bit behind, but you know, your bio link is the one that's live, so I have it permanently set to the Be Moving Forward blog site where you can get all the episodes.
Yeah, and just a little, so for people that are out there listening, if you are on Instagram, one of the unique features about Instagram is that you only get one URL, and a URL is your website, and you put that in your basically up in your bio. So if you are trying to post something with a website in the post, it will tell you that Instagram is having a hard time right now and you can't post your post. But if you didn't know that it's because you're actually trying to sneak in a website, it might be frustrating.
Yeah.
A workaround for that, which I've done, is that like, hey, check out this information or go to my website, ryanfoland.com, or your classic parentheses, ryanfoland.com, so that the...
Oh.
Instagram can't pick it up and your users are still sitting there going, there's a website I can go to. That's a good little sneak around.
Oh, that's great. I learned something new. That's awesome.
Now, a little pop quiz on Instagram. Tell me about your understanding of hashtags on Instagram.
You know, I am still experimenting with them. So what I've done, I just started doing this too. I started promoting the podcast with each guest. I would just use hashtags, and a lot of them are just, they fill in, they auto-fill in. So if I had someone who was a social media influencer, I would just type in, you know, hashtag, I would type in SOC, and then I would see the fill-in, and I would just use that as a smart SEO hack. And I just started hashtagging a lot of my posts, and I noticed it started attracting quite a few likes and comments, and it's something that I'm still learning and I'm still kind of experimenting with. But I have found the more I hashtag on a post on Instagram, the more traction it gets.
Yeah, and that's because as a platform, using hashtags on Instagram is a best practice idea. And it's, people have a challenge with it because I think there's this built up animosity about hashtaggers, right?
Yeah.
People get angry, like, stop using so many hashtags. And for those of you who are listening that have no idea what hashtags are, I have this concept on the show, which I call a GTO, or grandma time out. So I'd be curious, and I ask everybody, and if you feel like you're getting thrown under the bus, it's because you are.
But it's a coloring book, by the way, so
it's a
great use of a corporate cliche.
it's a clean energy bus, so it's not going to hurt as bad. But GTO hashtag. I'd love to hear how people explain it. So what is a hashtag like you're going to explain to your grandma or grandpa?
Yeah, you know what I would say it is? It's the modern-day version of the Dewey Decimal System. So for those of you, if you're
grandma
of that
knows
older
that, yeah.
generation, when you would go to the library, you would look at these file cards with all of these categories. So if you're looking for fiction or if you're looking for a how-to book, you would start with what they called the Dewey Decimal System, which was just basically an indexing system. And having worked in legal publishing, I knew all about taxonomies and indexing and all of that. What hashtag is, it's the modern day version of that. It allows the user to actually create categories. So, you know, a hashtag like hashtag business or hashtag B2B, it allows a user to actually search for posts under that particular category. Now, the upside of that is that it's user driven. I mean, it's basically, think of it like a Wikipedia system of indexing. The downside is, I mean, obviously, hashtags can get crazy. I see people putting full sentences in hashtags. Probably not too many people using the same hashtag, but for some people, I think it's become more of a trademark or more of a symbol than it is. But my understanding, it's basically an indexing system.
I think grandma and grandpa are really excited that they heard the words Dewey and decimal system together. We all loathed it as children because in sixth grade we had to like file and find cards, and I remember some sort of treasure hunt in the library or something like that. That's a great description. And it's important to understand that hashtags are used differently on each platform. And Instagram is very hashtag heavy.
Yes.
So I'm just checking out your Instagram, and here's a couple comments that just I've learned, right? So there's a few ways to make the hashtags not seem as aggressive, and it's really all about readability. So hashtag readability, right? If you have hashtag too many hashtags as your hashtagging, and then you've got an at symbol, if you have a hard time reading your post, other people will as well.
There's
also this concept of white space, right? Like if we look at a post and our eye just catches tons of hashtags, it looks intimidating. So there's two really good hacks that I use, which maybe you can play with. Your hashtags give you just as much credit if they're in a comment as they are in the original post.
So one
best practice, this is something that Leonard does all the time. He'll do his content for the post, right? He'll have a quote card or something and have a little bite-sized nugget of what it is. Then he'll post it. Then what you do is you go in and you make your own first comment. And as a comment, then you throw up the hashtags like crazy, and it still associates those hashtags with the post. But if you're looking at it on the feed, you only see the blurb.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
That's a great one. I think I'm going to start using that one. That is fantastic. Once again, credit to Leonard. I mean, I learned so much from the guy.
Yeah. So here's another hack that I've also learned, which is sometimes it's nice to have the hashtags as part of the post because it's relevant, right? Like I do an Instagram drawing every day, and the last one was that, you know, your face is an emoji. And so I sort of wanted to have a couple hashtags in that realm, almost like my creative thoughts of words that I associate with the post. And I wanted that to be part of my post. But what you can do is instead of just doing the hashtags right after your blurb, do enter, star, enter, star, enter, star, at least three, maybe five. And what it does is it visually pushes down the hashtags so that when you look at it, it says, here's your little blurb, and then it clicks to say, see more. And when you click see more, it's still not super aggressive because your eyeballs focus from the white space onto the actual Instagram post.
Oh, that's awesome. I will be using both of those. Thank you so much for that.
Okay, now because three is my favorite number because
I love it.
Not only is my numerology number three, have you ever had your numerology number taken?
I don't think I have.
Okay.
But my birthday is February 7th, so I always gravitate towards seven. It's supposed to be a lucky number. So.
Okay, seven is just two pairs of threes plus one, so that's cool. So
I didn't know we were doing math today, by the way. So I'm fooled by the fact that I'm Asian. Math is never my strong suit. So
it's simple math because people have been taught incorrectly to count. Here's how you count: one, two, three, many.
I love it. New math with Ryan Fole.
New math with Ryan Fole, and this is how you count. One, two, three, many. And I give credit to learning that from John Bates, a mentor of mine who's a great speaker. And it's really true because there's a magic of threes. There's a reason why there's three bears.
Yeah.
There's a reason why there's three blind mice. There's a reason for this in cultural and literary and even movie. Things work better in threes. But when you're speaking or when you're communicating, if you have more than three things, people are going to lose you. So keep it to three. So the third Instagram tip here is along the lines of hashtags. Do you know how many hashtags you can physically put in a post before Instagram?
I actually don't. I've never tried to push the limit on that.
Okay. It's 30.
30. Okay.
Now, that may seem aggressive, and it kind of is, but if you have 31 hashtags in your post, it won't allow you to post it. And for a while, I was like, you know, somebody said, the more hashtags, the better. So I was hashtagging it up, hashtagging, and then it wouldn't post it. And I was like, this Instagram thing is broken, and I had to Google it to find out that 30 was the limit.
Wow. So, okay, good to know.
So one thing that I'll do is I'll go back to my old posts, and I will actually sort of, so I'll go back to, say, my first post, and then what I'll do is I'll refresh it. I'll make a comment on my own post from a long time ago, and I will update it basically with hashtags. And what it does is that puts it back out onto the radar. So a post that you did 6 months ago now might be back on the radar, and all of a sudden you'll see this flurry of likes with it again.
Oh, that's a good one, too. It's kind of combining Leonard's practice of, like, using the comments and then just refreshing it and making it more current. That's great. Fantastic
and then,
stuff.
And then after maybe a week or so, I'll go back and I'll delete them because it's already served its purpose, and it gets the more of attention, and it re-sparks it, but then people aren't looking at it thinking that you did a weird hack around kind of thing.
Gotcha. Good.
I actually did something very similar with my own personal Instagram account. When I first started out, I used all 30 of the hashtags right in my comments at the top, and someone actually had to point out to me that that's kind of not the best practice. And I went in later and deleted them after they served their purpose and that kind of thing. So, I mean, experience teaches a lot of things, and good job.
And you've heard it from Dash. See that experience from other people. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from Eleanor Roosevelt, and she says, you have to learn from other people's mistakes because you just don't have enough time to make them all yourself.
And wow,
I think that's very true. So yeah, there we go. Definitely. Those are our three hacks for hashtags on Instagram. We weren't even planning on that, but it just naturally came up.
I love it. And as someone who considers himself a noob on Instagram, this is fantastic for me.
Very cool. Like, I'm just looking at your Blitz metrics. Dennis is the man. So is Logan. Did you have them on?
Yeah, they were the guests this week, so their episode premiered yesterday.
So cool. All right, well, wow, I feel like as John Lee Dumas would say, like, there's some serious truth bombs, right?
Exactly.
Now, do you have any, let's talk about your show, because if we're talking about learning from people's mistakes, it's a great transition, because you get to listen to people who are finding success now, but no success comes without struggle.
Yeah.
Ooh, maybe that's my quote for today. Dash, let's write that down. No success comes without struggle.
I think that's your Instagram post for the day.
And for my own selfish purposes, if you do want to check out my Instagram or my Twitter, those are my two favorite sites. I've given up my personal Facebook for the entire year. I'm only focusing on Facebook with my public profile. Yeah, I just felt like it was too distracting. I'd go in, I'd be like, oh, how's this person doing? Oh my gosh, look at them. And I'd just get lost. So for me, I made a decision to really focus on the public profile, which has me, I have the ability to interact differently. It's more of a one-sided interaction. So I apologize to all my friends, but it's just, I'm not that into Facebook. Like, if she was a girl, I'd sit down and have a conversation. Like, let's just be friends, right?
It's not you, it's me.
It's Facebook. It's not you, it's me. It's Twitter because I like Twitter more. Well, I like Twitter because it's quick, it's easy, and it's not Facebook, right?
Yeah.
So if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Ryan Foland, just like it sounds, and. I did get my handle stolen on Instagram, so if you look
did you
for
really?
Well, kind of, it's some guy named Ryan Follin that had grabbed the handle and hasn't done anything with it.
But
on Instagram, my value squatter, my value proposition for people who want to check me out on Instagram is that every day I do a Sharpie drawing. So I thought to myself, you know, I'm obsessed with Sharpies, and Sharpies make good dots. So I just made my handle Ryan.Foland, and the dot represents that you're going to get Sharpie drawings. How's that?
I love it. Great. I mean, that's personal branding right in your Instagram handle. I absolutely love that.
personal branding gramming, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
I think you got a new one there, branding gramming.
So more about your show, and sticking to the number three, who are three... you know, guests that really stuck out in your mind that you learned a lot from that we could share the wealth. And it's also going to give my listeners a taste of what to expect on your show.
Yeah.
And we'll go from there. So maybe just start with one. Who's a memorable guest that you really learned a lot from?
Jan Grisanti, episode 16. She was, I would say that's, episode 16 was around the time where I started branching out beyond my Rolodex. So when I launched the podcast, I went through and I was already connected to some very cool people. And I quickly exhausted that. And Jan Grisanti was the first person I actually just reached out to I wouldn't say a cold email. It was actually a Facebook post because we actually had some friends in common, and she's also a public figure. And I thought it was her birthday, so I just sent her a message. I said, Jen, happy birthday. Love your work. Would be honored if you'd be a guest when moving forward. And she wrote back. She said, I'd love to be a guest on your show. And she's got such a cool story. So she was
Hold on one second, John. I'm going to interrupt because people are thinking to themselves, how do I get in front of people? And you just hit, I mean, talk about cliches. We always get these notifications, right? Oh, it's somebody's birthday, and you might think it's cheesy or Facebook is like aggressive with telling you this stuff. But you used the birthday excuse just to reach out and say, happy birthday. I love what you do. I'd love to talk with you.
Yes.
Wow.
That was pretty much my first, that was my message. And I did it in a message as opposed to a post.
Okay.
And,
so more of a private approach.
Immediately. I was just pretty floored by that. And, her story was phenomenal. I mean, she was a former executive VP at CBS Paramount. She worked under Aaron Spelling and had her hand in so many different shows. A lot of them are still on the air now. And then she lost her job. She got laid off. She had a marriage that ended. And just she was at that rock bottom point. But she had been encouraged by so many people, including her mentor, Aaron Spelling, to do this on her own. I mean, because as a story consultant, because Aaron Spelling actually said you give the best story script notes when, you know, you're looking at a script. So she launched the Jen Grisanti Consultancy, I think it's about 9 years ago, and has been killing it ever since. I mean, she is just absolutely rocking it. And in fact, I loved our interview so much that I actually reached out to John Lee Dumas and said, John, you need to interview Jen Grisanti. And long before I had John on my show, John actually booked Jen Grisanti. So that was a really cool moment.
Very cool. And again, it's interesting for all of us who have the ups and downs. And I always say, you know, if I'm feeling really good, you got to be careful, because when you're feeling really good, it's really easy for things to go really wrong really quickly, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're already not doing well, like things can still, you can still get hit in the face with a brick, and you're like, that's cool, I wasn't feeling good anyways. But as soon as you start to feel good, you have a lot further to fall. And then when you're like really good and you're the top of the game, the way down is kind of a one way. So it's inspiring to hear that people who've been up at the top find themselves at the bottom only to get back up at the top again.
Yeah. And she really, I mean, that was quite the fall. I mean, it was her personal life, her career life. And, you know, she was in this moment where she had to decide, all right, what am I going to do? I'm going to try to get back into the corporate door, or am I going to listen to the advice and the encouragement of other people and do this on my own? And the cool part was we actually became friends after that. She was in D.C., which is the area I'm in. She was in D.C. for a conference, and we actually caught up for lunch, and I just re-interviewed her for the 100th episode last week. So really cool. I mean, for the most part, I would say with most of my podcast guests, I get, at the very minimum, a really cool story, a really cool interview. But with a couple of them, I've been able to develop some really great friendships, and that to me has just been incredible.
Okay, so you mentioned rock bottom, and it makes me think of Ryan Blair, who had a book just came out, From Rock Bottom to Rock Star. Do you know who Ryan Blair is?
Yeah, I've heard the name, yeah.
So I can make an introduction. I've had him on the show. He came to one of our OC Tech Happy Hour events, did a book launch. Great guy, great name, by the way. I mean, come on, how, it doesn't get better than the name Ryan.
Yeah, well, the first one, of course. I don't know, maybe you can work on the second one. Should he change it?
You know, we'll just call him Ryan, okay? We'll just, you
Ryan.
Know, yeah. So I'll introduce you to this guy, Ryan.
Well, how about that?
But his book is all about, you know, how he was at rock bottom and how you get to that rock star moment. And I think that as a society, if we realize and take ownership of our own story, that certain parts are not as good as others, it in the opposite way, where like, if you are down, things that are good, you feel great, and you have a lot of room for improvement. I'm thinking of all my economic days and all these graphs and charts, and I feel like I can statistically graph it out, but we'll leave that for another day. So so resilience is really what you learn from her, and it sounds like taking advice from mentors and that sort of never die spirit.
Also, the power of story. And one of the cool parts about Jen is that she works with a lot of aspiring screenwriters. I mean, if you go to her Facebook page, you'll see, like, left and right, her students are getting booked on incredible gigs for TV shows. But she also works with businesses, which I think is so cool. She works with business leaders on the art of telling your story. And that was something that I think I struggled with. You know, and I say this very candidly. When I launched the podcast, that was my first year out as an entrepreneur. I made a ton of mistakes, one of which was, you know, not having a great story behind what it is I was trying to do. And part of that was trying to figure out exactly what it is I'm trying to do. So yeah. I just learned so much from Jen about the power of owning your story and understanding your why. And that's how you're really going to connect with your market, your audience. And that was just so cool.
I love it. One of my quotes the other day was, own your own story.
Yeah.
And it was inspired by what I was getting ready for this talk, because Leonard always talks about how every superhero has a backstory. So
yeah.
You should too, right? And it's the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we're all flawed. I love the analogy of good old George Washington, right? He pretty much single-handedly defeated the enemy, single-handedly brought the country to its prestige. He was like the renegade. He was the scholar. Regardless of whether or not he had wooden teeth, he didn't do anything wrong, except maybe cut down a cherry tree one time, right?
Right.
But I don't really resonate with that. It's kind of an inflated story. Like, if he had Facebook, I'd expect a lot of humble brags on his posts,
yeah.
Right? And so if you don't have a realistic story and you're sort of just highlighting the highlights of what's going on in your life, it's not going to resonate with people as much because, you know, here's my train of thought. In your story, you make mistakes. The mistakes lead to lessons. The lessons lead to experience. The experience creates credibility. And it's because of that credibility that you can become an expert. So you can't be an expert without making mistakes. There's another quote for the day. Let's write that one down,
one.
Joy.
I think that's a great one.
I called you Joy, but I meant Dash. So I think that's great. Now, talk about a guest. Dash, the quote, what did I just say? You can't be an expert without making mistakes.
Yeah.
... and learning from them. Okay, so that's a great guest. And then who would be number...
You wanted two more?
Yeah, two more. Who would be number two on your list?
I would say Doug Drexler. Doug Drexler is someone that I've known for years. I actually knew him from my acting days. And this guy is a phenom. I mean, he's Academy Award winner, makeup artist, Emmy Award winning visual effects artist. But what was so cool was to get him on the podcast and to talk about, you know, most people when they talk to Doug Drexler, they geek out over the fact that he worked on Star Trek, he worked on Battlestar Galactica, he's worked on all these incredible sci-fi shows. I got to talk to him one-on-one about what makes him tick. And what was really cool was, and he said this on the episode, this is the first time he ever shared it, he shared his big failure story, his big fear story that really forever changed his life. And for me, that was just amazing to hear. I mean, so to give you the short version of the story, when he was a teenager, he loved comic books. He was a huge fan of DC Comics. He actually, I think he cold called someone at DC Comics, got invited to the office, and I think it was a president or an executive said, here, I'm going to give you an assignment. I want you to draw a couple of cells of Superman. And he said he was so stunned and floored by it that he went home and he couldn't move. He literally couldn't move. He couldn't do it.
He had the sweaty monkey finger.
Yeah,
and
it was the sweaty finger. It was like the sweaty body, actually. He was paralyzed with fear. And he said he failed because he just couldn't get over his... He couldn't get out of his own head. He couldn't do it. Even though he had the ability and the talent, he said, from that point on, I decided I'm never going to let fear hold me back from doing anything. And the cool part about Doug is that he's come up through an incredibly tough industry, and he's self-taught. Everything that he's done, from sculpting to computer animation to makeup, I mean, he is self-taught. I mean, that's pretty phenomenal. And to have him come on and to share a story, and he even said, I don't think I've even told my wife this story yet. So it was really, really, I was pretty speechless when he shared that story.
Wow, that's great. And I think we all have stories in our past that we're maybe not proud of, or we think that people would look at us in a negative light. But really, that's what connects people as humans. And once you realize that you're flawed and that you're not George Washington and that you've done things way worse than cut down a cherry tree. And was it him or Abe Lincoln that cut down the cherry tree?
It was George Washington. I think that was it was George Washington.
You know what? I'm going to go to my resident expert here, Dash. Can you tell us about this? Do you know the history behind the cherry tree?
I do, actually. I went to George Washington's home, basically.
Okay. Mount Vernon. Yeah, I've been there. Yes. Very cool. Yeah.
And it's actually, that never happened. It was a historical myth that they thought up in like the 1800s. And I've seen a lot of portraits of like this event depicted. What always weirds me out is that they put adult George's head on child George's body. That's just I can't.
Well, as if he grew up with the wig and the wooden teeth and that, you know, that prominent stature.
Exactly.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, and I think that what I learned about that story now is that we thought he was flawed before. I thought he was flawed before because he cut down a cherry tree. But the jury is out. He didn't even cut down the cherry tree. So he was absolutely perfect.
I heard that as well, that was myth. That was not actually an event.
So he was perfect. He was just a perfect human being all around, I'm sure. Yeah, Dash, you wanted to add something?
Oh, I said, besides the slavery.
besides that and probably mistresses.
There's that and the fact that, you know, he didn't exactly. I think, if I remember my history correctly, I think he died prematurely because he followed some really bad medical advice on how to get over a cold, which was to basically strip down to your underwear and go outside in the snow. And I think that he ended up dying of pneumonia, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow, that's crazy. So you see here in our politics, we have, alternate facts going all the way back to George Washington.
Although that might have to be fact-checked, so I seem to recall that, but, you know, I could be wrong on that one.
And it's interesting because whatever the case, whether it's true or not, in this crazy world, when it lives online, whether it's fake or not, it influences people, and it still can make an impact.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've all got
number three.
Number three, yes,
is going to be no surprise to you. In fact, I'll let you guess who that was.
I'm going to guess it's Leonard.
Yes.
Okay.
It was Leonard Kim.
Okay. Yeah. Cool.
For two reasons. Number one, I think every guest I've had has been really, really cool. But what I loved about Leonard was just that you see what you get. I mean, he is just very candid about his story. He's had this incredible success, but, you know, that's not what he talks about when you interview him. He talks about all the stuff in his life, his failures. And what's great about him is that you learn so much about his story that you don't see from Forbes or necessarily from Entrepreneur, but all the headlines that he's in, but just to hear his backstory. And the other cool part is Leonard's the type of person, once you become friends with him, he's got this quirky sense of humor that always kind of rears its head all over the place. And he makes no bones about putting me in embarrassing situations, whether it's sharing out a personal meme that ends up blowing up on Twitter, on my dating life, or what have you, screenshotting emails and text messages and putting them on Facebook.
Nothing
is
safe.
I mean, he's one of the most transparent people you're ever going to meet.
Yeah, and I get along with him well because we're very different people. I'm like loud and obnoxious, and he's quiet and obnoxious.
Well, you know, that's the thing. And he and I kind of have this theory that, you know, we could probably be, and I think I did this Photoshop post of, I said, if Netflix were ever able to reboot Perfect Strangers, you remember that sitcom from the 80s and 90s?
Yeah.
I think we would be perfectly cast as the cousins. I would be kind of the uptight, straight-laced one, and he'd be the one that that came over in the boat in culottes, and it's just kind of like this wild, free spirit.
Yeah, and Leonard's the perfect example of a sweaty monkey finger. And if you're just listening, you're like, what does he keep talking about, sweaty monkey fingers? If you're ever on MailChimp, right before you send your final draft, it's a sweaty monkey finger, and it's like, are you really sure you want to do this? And you're like, yes. And it's like the Dr. Evil detonation button, and you're like, oh.
Yeah, exactly.
But
exactly.
He has found his success in simply being honest and truthful about all the bad, terrible things that have happened in his life.
Yeah, and believe me, I mean, like, I've interviewed people who've gone through some terrible things and some really big setbacks, but very few people have gone through as much as Leonard has.
Yeah, so it's exciting because he is quirky, he's just being real, he's owning his story, and, you know, he's genuinely a nice guy, which is difficult to find out there these days.
Yeah, I genuine and nice. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, with all of his mischief, I mean, the guy's got a heart of gold.
Yeah. So what about you? Let's focus for a little bit about you and your backstory, because I know that you've overcome the fact that you maybe didn't know how to communicate it. So now you've got this chance in this audience. What is it that, you know, makes you tick, and what is it that you've stumbled on, and how can some of our listeners learn from your sweaty monkey fingers?
Well, I'll tell you, Ryan, it's funny. I mean, the way I describe myself, if I had to sum myself up, is career wanderlust. So I've done a lot of different things in my career, and you know, I went a very traditional A to B path. I went to college, then law school. I practiced law. I was absolutely miserable. I took a sideways turn, decided to get into acting, which I had done a little bit in college. And this was following a breakup with a girl I was dating at the time. And I decided, you know what, I need something to distract me. So I decided to pursue acting. It actually turned from a hobby into a pretty serious side gig where I was booking roles on TV shows, commercials, and then ended up playing Sulu on Internet Star Trek, which was really wild.
Wow.
And then I was in corporate America for a while, you know, for about 13 years. And, you know, I got to the point where I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I'm not sure I want to stay in a corporate job until I retire. I don't know if I'm really wired for that. I just have too much curiosity. I have too many things I want to do. And so, you know, I got my business degree, and that kind of, and it kind of sparked some things with me. At first, I used to think, I have all of these random experiences. I maybe have like ADHD where I can't really settle down with one thing. But then more recently, I think I've discovered, you know what, everything that I've done is just part of my story. And from the acting to, you know, public speaking, which I learned a lot about when I was a lawyer, to working in corporate America, doing, you know, webinars and online courses, you know, it's not necessarily all a disconnected mess. There's a way I can start bringing this together and getting it back to the podcast. That's something that I've learned from so many of the guests that I've interviewed. A lot of my guests have done different things, and they haven't let the fact that they haven't necessarily settled into a quote-unquote one job or profession define them in a negative way. And that's one of the things that I'm kind of coming to terms with, is that I love doing different things. I love trying different things and, you know, weird, quirky side projects as well. I just have this excitement of just exploring and trying different things. I also have, sometimes I have hesitation and sweaty monkey fingers from trying things as well. But at the end of the day, you know, everything that I've ever put myself out there and done, whether it's acting or podcasting, it's been wonderful. I mean, I have those moments where I have this fear and should I hit that publish button? Should I really put this out there? But the benefits and if you want to use a finance term, the return on the investment has been huge.
Now, I'm curious to pick your brain on one thing. I really try to help people find their focus, right? Focus, yeah. Focus, 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 focus. But I have some people that push back and say, well, I'm kind of like you said, I did this and then this and here and this and all over the place. And they feel like their path is maybe a bit scrambled, but I'm curious your opinion. I'm a big fan of the whole concept that the jack of all trades is the master of none.
Right.
But it sounds like what you've done is you've taken this path that is kind of a, I'm thinking of a Price is Right Plunko path, right? Doom, 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 doom. Like, wait.
Perfect analogy.
Land on the
perfect
big analogy. Money, right? No whammy, no whammy. Two different game shows. That was a game show Inception smash sandwich. But
yeah.
You've taken the fact that you have so much broad experience, and now you've used that to find a focus. So
yeah.
I'm curious your thoughts on that, where I always encourage people, you know, what is the one thing that you're really good at? And a lot of people just stare blankly and they're like, well, I don't know. I'm kind of okay at a lot of different stuff. And I'm like, from a personal branding standpoint, from communicating your value to sparking conversation to getting people excited about what you're doing, I really feel you've got a lead with one thing. But coming from somebody who has this diverse experience, I mean, I'm not saying that's a bad thing,
No, but, and Ryan, I'm so glad you brought that up, because what my journey has been is not necessarily I'm trying to do like 20 different things, but it's identifying what is the connective thread through all of the things that I've done. And for me, it's really been about, I would say, if I have to distill down what is my one focus, that I'm able to communicate. I'm able to communicate something that share someone's passion. If someone is passionate about a project, I'm able to share that, to communicate that. Communication skills. I don't have any fear of getting up on stage and giving a speech or presentation. And that comes from having done all these different careers, having been a lawyer, having been an actor, having worked in corporate America. And the podcast is really an extension of that. It's a way that I've been able to hone a lot of the expressive and communication skills and the conversation skills that I've built up over all of these different things, and put it into a medium, a packaged digital content medium that I'm really excited and passionate about.
And I think the what resonates with what you said is this common thread. And I think that's a great visual. You know, maybe it's a blunt needle and you're sewing through the clothes that you're wearing, so it's not as painful as that. But there is a way to stitch things. And if you look at a transition from one thing to the next, there's reasoning and logic. Sometimes you might chalk it up to I was at the right place at the right time, but that's because you're outgoing and you're networking and you're pushing forward and you're doing things. So if you're out there, just for my own sake, I really encourage you to, from a communication standpoint, go out there with one thing. Because John, if you came up to me and you're like, well, hi, my name is John and I do this and this and this is what I did and this 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 and I am just, my eyes are rolling, right? And that happens all the time because we're excited about these different elements. But I always say that the more you talk, the less people listen. And the less you talk, more people will ask questions. And questions drives conversation. And conversation is really exciting because people want to talk. And in a two-way conversation, you've either listening or talking. And so if you're the one talking... You may think that you're creating a connection, but it's not there. There's a really cool study. I can't name it exactly, but they did this psychological study where they brought in people and they took note of who was talking more than the other person. And then afterwards, they asked people about their level of connectedness. And consistently, the people that talked more felt more connected. But that wasn't the case because the person who was listening more just kind of felt like there wasn't that connection. So from a communication standpoint, if you've done 15 things and you feel like you're doing 11 of them now, find that common thread and communicate it. Because if the person you're talking to is interested, then they'll start asking questions. And I think this conversation we're having right now is so relevant to not only offline, but online conversations. If your social media platform has like, you know, peppercorn everywhere, like nobody knows whether or not they want to actually follow you.
Yeah.
So if you create some sort of focus and you're sharing different things online, like what is that focus? And focus. I'm just passionate about that, but hopefully it doesn't come across as an aggressive ginger.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. And that's why I felt like for so long I had this career wanderlust, is because I couldn't identify what the connective thread between all of these things are. And I'm just now, I'd say in the last year or so, putting that piece together and getting that focus that you're talking about. And it makes a huge difference.
I am a big communication geek as well. And I love the fact that you're an actor. I actually have a degree in dramatic art from UC Santa Barbara, as well as a business. And I was the guy that was a double major with business and drama. And it's been fun because there's a lot of drama and business and drama.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you, like me, were sort of this Generation X, maybe with millennial tendencies, and you're starting to get onto the social media where you're communicating. But you're like the super strong, confident, amazing communicator offline. What are some of the things that you have learned or taken from your acting, from your public speaking, that you're seeing translate to online?
Oh, that's a great question. I think I attribute it more to the acting, I think, because, you know, dressing up in a outfit, you know, flying a starship is, it's a pretty nerdy, geeky thing to do. If you're willing to put yourself out there like that and, you know, have no qualms about doing something like that and showing this kind of nerdy side of yourself, and while also trying to convey a performance or communicate a character, I think that's something that you can carry with you no matter what it is you're doing, especially if you're communicating with someone online. It's just one of those things where I don't have as much, I don't think I have as much hesitation as maybe someone who hasn't really kind of stretched themselves creatively to do something like that.
And I think that's encouraging for people who have not been historically on social media. Like, for me, 2 years ago, no social media footprint at all. And
yeah,
now,
me neither, by the way. I mean, I'm relatively new to social media, so I'm still learning as I go.
Yeah, and what's encouraging about what you're saying, because our listeners either are good at social media and want to get better, they are confused by social media, or they absolutely hate social media, right? We love them all. But what you're saying is that if you're a Gen X who hasn't taken the jump, or it's a recent jump, or you're a baby boomer and you're just totally lost, some of these life skills and the confidence that you have and your public speaking and your experiences of communicating your story, those actually are a huge advantage to maybe a millennial that hasn't lived without social media. What do you think about that concept?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and I've heard this adage or cliche many times, and I think there's truth to it. A lot of times, it's not what you say, but how you say it. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. If you're saying something and you have confidence, if you have passion behind it, I think you're going to resonate with an audience, even if the words aren't perfect, even if you're not necessarily crafting the perfect sentence. And I've coached people in public speaking, and I think a lot of people get caught up on that in trying to be perfect in the syntax and the verbiage, when in fact the emotional impact, the confidence isn't there.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have this concept called face dancing, where I argue that there's two types of bad dancers. Okay, there's a bad dancer on any given dance floor, and they are the people that are trying to put their moves to the music, right? Like, they're mm-hmm. going to do a dab here and then, you know, do this, and it's very trying to put the round pegs in the round holes at the right time. But it's bad, because they're just trying to, like, you know, you just imagine them on the dance floor. They're practicing these moves and they're doing the moves, but it's not connecting with the music.
Yeah.
Nobody really wants to dance with them, right? But if you go to any given wedding, on any given dance floor, on any wedding, there are the worst dancers in the history of the world. Like, they are terrible. It's grandma, it's a nephew, it's an uncle, everybody's drunk, and it's like, woo, they're terrible. But there's something about the energy when you're at a wedding with your friends and family, and you don't really care, and you're doing the washing machine just because that's what you're feeling. And it gives me the kind of goosebumps thinking about it. But like, there's so, like, you want to go dance with them. You want to go dance with a 6-year-old and a 70-year-old, and it's just like, it's fun. And the analogy for me is that when you're speaking, you're literally dancing with your face and your body.
That's,
and if you're the person that goes, okay, well, hold on. I'm going to look at the left, look at the center, look at the right. I think I need to be a little bit lower. Project to the back of the room and dramatically pause. Like, that's bad speaking with good mechanics. But if you go up there and you have just a huge smile on your face, and it takes you a second to say the first word, but you say it with such passion that everybody's like, oh my gosh, like, they've forgotten that you're a bad technically communicator, but you're resonating with the audience.
Yeah.
And I think that same type of attitude can really help to get you comfortable on social media, because it's not about having the perfect selfie with the perfect Botox filter with the perfect everything. I mean, who cares if you do a typo? Who cares if it's a little bit off, if it's cropped incorrectly? That's like, that's you. You're imperfect unless you're George Washington. So I think that's a fun concept, and I love that you are seeing that same thing, where a lot of communication is confidence.
Yeah, it is. And think about it as an actor. I mean, you studied acting. Memorizing your lines is only step one, right? I mean, someone can memorize lines and recite them, but if there's no emotional impact or passion behind them, it's just someone who's just droning on. And so it's there's a lot more to it than that. And I think the analogy you're drawing is perfect. I mean, social media is very much just having that confidence, having that passion.
Awesome. Well, hey, I can't believe that it's already been an hour. Can you?
Oh, my gosh. And you didn't even... Wait, weren't you supposed to ask me a question that Leonard floated to you?
Yeah. So, Leonard, I talked with him recently, and he said, oh, my gosh, you have John on your show. Ask him about McDonald's. Tell us about McDonald's.
All right. What I can tell you about McDonald's is that Leonard and I both share this fond childhood memory of McDonald's. He apparently still loves McDonald's. I don't really eat at McDonald's anymore. But
you've grown up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I try to live healthy lifestyle. But, yeah, so we'll trade emails and messages about McDonald's. And I think I've sent in some vintage photos of McDonald's back when the menu prices were like 19 cents, stuff like that. And actually, recently, I sent him an article about a McDonald's in, I think it was in Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken, Missouri. It's like the McDonald's of the future, where they have like all these like touch screens, and it's like really decked out. And the promo they have right now is, I think, unlimited French fries. So I just gave a plug to a McDonald's in the Midwest.
Wow.
So.
Copping after Red Robinson. And there you have it. See, you can bond with people who maybe you think you could never approach, even when it comes down to something as simple as McDonald's. But the reason for that is because it's part of your story. It's part of your memories. It's part of where you came from. So whether it's offline or online, what I've learned from you today is that it's really just about finding common ground and owning your story, because there's nothing more powerful than your story or stories except for love.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
Well, Dash, it's been a pleasure. Dash has been tweeting up a storm, so check Twitter for all kinds of activity. Dash, you want to say goodbye?
Goodbye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
All right. And then, John, and
one more thing, Ryan. I'm also just shameless plug. If you're interested in learning more about my Star Trek Adventures, crack.com actually did a write-up on me today. It's on their cover page. Right. Wrong photo. It's not me. They actually used the wrong photo, and I only played Sulu for 3 years, but it's a really cool article. So check
it out. Okay, so John Lim on Crack. Check it out, crack.com. Okay, John, well, this is great. Stick around.
Okay, let's get this right, Ryan.
What is it? Crack.com.
Crack.com.
I love that site.
Okay. All right, cool. So check out John Lim. Check him out online. Give him some love. Amazing stuff today. Ladies and gentlemen, stick around for Writers on Writing. You have officially been notified, and it is time for me to go. John, it's been
a
pleasure. Let's go have McDonald's sometime.
Absolutely. It sounds good. Thanks so much, Ryan.
All right, buddy. Thanks for listening to another episode of Get Notified. If you'd like to find more, you can find them online at getnotified.kuci.org. We'll see you around. This is DJ Ginger MC signing out.